The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com, is heard on the We Be Geeks Collective and on sci-fi.radio.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Helm, report.
Sir, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Starboard bow?
Starboard bow!
What are they doing there?
They seem to be waiting for the new episode of Earth Station Trek.
Science, what do we know about this Earth Station Trek?
It's a podcast that treks through the history of Star Trek, from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Navigation, how would one find such a podcast?
By setting coordinates for earthstationtrek.com or by doing a sensor sweep of Spotify, iTunes, or any other quadrant where fine podcasts are available.
Captain, what are we going to do about the Klingons?
We come in peace, Commander. Weapon station, shoot to kill.
Shoot to kill!
Shoot to kill!
We're the Con Guys, and this is the Con Guy Show, coming to you straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California.
And this is Jim with theconguy.com.
She's been here with theconguy.com.
Katie here, aka the Con Girl.
Zordon did not want five teenagers with attitude.
My name is Derek Sam.
I'm Danae Sam, and that's my brother.
We are your home for news, opinions and interviews from the world of comic cons and fandoms, your ultimate insiders for all things con.
Stranger Things. We have watched the chunk of episodes that just dropped, and the Samblings are here tonight to talk about, wow, all the things there are to talk about. Strange things. Stranger and maybe even strangest. But I am Derek Sams, one half of the Samblings. I'm a regular on The Con Guy, and I'm on Twitter at Con Guy Derek. Who are you?
I'm Danae Sams, and I'm the other half of the Samblings. I'm also half of the Con Girls. Con Girl Katie might be joining us later, because as we record this, she is watching episode 7, season 4 of Stranger Things, so she might hop on. I mean, I watched episode 7 earlier this afternoon, and I wasn't okay to talk for a little bit, so we'll see if she can do it or not. So we might be hearing from her. But yeah, other half of the Samblings, other half of the Con Girls, on Con Guy quite a bit, and I'm so excited to talk Stranger Things.
I really hope Katie can join, because it would be awesome to get a reaction immediately after finishing it. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah.
I just like, okay, speaking of that, how are we feeling? Before you say anything, I should probably explain. We call ourselves each one half of the Samblings, but technically we're 2/3 of the Samblings, because we do have a brother, but he's on the East Coast and I don't think he's finished the episodes yet. So he probably won't be on
tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if he hasn't watched any of the episodes yet.
Oh yeah. Well, he's a dad of three.
I don't think he's finished Ted Lasso yet. So I don't think he can
join us. Oh my, so behind. Oh well. But yeah. Okay. Reactions. Have you gotten your jaw up off the floor yet?
I think that this might have been the best season yet. I mean, obviously, when you say best season yet, we can only say that just because of how well set up the Duffer Brothers gave us. I mean, they built such an elaborate world with really great characters in right off the bat in season one. Like, there's a reason this show is so popular and has lasted this long, because they did such a great job with not just the world building, but the complex characters and the monsters that we're dealing with. And I think it's because of that the show just kept getting better. I mean, season 3 was so good. I'll never forget the day that it dropped, because it was 4th of July. It was evening and I was like, oh, I'll watch like an episode or two before I go to bed. And I ended up staying up till like 2 a.m. to finish.
You can never watch just an episode.
You never watch just an episode of Stranger Things. It does not happen.
Yeah.
And I remember texting a friend who was also up late. Like, she had done the exact same thing. And we were like, man, it took forever to get season 3. It's going to be like Christmas 2020 when we get the next episodes.
And it was much later because 2020 was 2020.
Exactly.
Where March lasted for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. So I had an amazing time watching this. Okay. Season 3, my wife and I binge. We were staying with some friends for 4th of July weekend that year, and was actually our friend's parents' house. And he got home, and like the three of us just binged the rest of it because we couldn't stop. And it was so good. And this season, yeah, it's so hard to say. Like, part of me wants to say it's my favorite. There were several times while I was watching it, I thought, wow, this might be my favorite season so far. But I also just rewatched all the other seasons, and there's so much that I appreciate more when I rewatch too. Like, I always thought that Dustin was my favorite, but then I go back and rewatch, and of the gang, like, I really like Lucas. I mean, just he's the way he's like gearing up to go and fight on his own if he has to. He's like gonna go and rescue his buddy, and I love that. That slingshot really
his
comes
wrist
in handy.
Rocket.
Yeah.
He was ready to take
in
on the game
in particular. Remember, he like uses it to pop the balloons and distract the mind flayer so they can get away. It's there's so much to love. And then this season we got all the characters that we have loved for so long being themselves. I really appreciate this show has remained faithful to the characters. They have not betrayed their audience the way some shows do. When this show throws a twist at you, it's not one of those things where you're like, oh, come on. It was one of those, it's a twist that like any surprises they lay in there, really they earn, you know? It's yeah, the fast and slow moments too, they earn. It's not meaningless action when you've got a lot of fast-paced action. And when things slow down a bit, you're not bored. You know, you're really invested in the characters. And that's what I really love about the show. And I was finishing, I had to pause season 7 like halfway through, or sorry, episode 7. I had to stop partway through because I was like, okay, I've got to go to bed. Hey, we've got a friend. Jonathan Wilkinson, a regular viewer. Thank
Jonathan
you. I'm
Wilkinson.
So glad you're here. Samming's works too. I like that. But yeah, I stopped it. I hopped on like a night or two later to watch, and my mother-in-law was visiting. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, my wife is Filipino. My mother-in-law, like, she and my in-laws came over when they were young with their families from the Philippines to America. They've still got accents. My mother-in-law makes amazing food. And while my wife was out of town for work, my mother-in-law was here taking care of us and making sure I ate a ton and helping take care of the babies. It was amazing. And then she watched like the final 38 minutes of episode 7 with me. She had never watched the show before. She had seen bits and pieces, like just walking through the room and somebody else was watching it. And she was so into it, like every little jump or anything. And I was trying to explain really quickly. I was like, and by the way, if you didn't catch on, there will be major spoilers. This is your last warning.
This is the last. We gave some initial reactions. Now we're getting into the spoilers.
Yes.
If you have not finished,
I was trying to explain to her really quickly.
Episode 7 of season 4.
Yeah. I was trying to explain to her really quickly what was going on. I was like, okay, there's another dimension, and this guy is in a Russian prison, and they're trying to break him out, but there's also this monster that came from that other dimension that's trying to fight them, and this girl has superpowers, but she lost them, so this whole thing is a memory that she has to relive so she can get through it all, but she repressed the memory, and this guy was trying to help her escape the lab, so I was going through all of this, and then, like, it was enough, because the scenes were so engaging, she was just super into it, and she's like, oh no, you do the thing, do you have your powers yet? Cheering for Elle. And then we got done and I was like, okay, do you want to go back and watch just the first episode? And she did. She was totally on board. So we did. And of course we didn't watch just the first episode. We had to watch the second one. And the whole time she's like, oh no, what happened to Will? And I was like, that's the mystery of the season. I can't tell you. And then she was saying things like, oh, is Barbara okay? And I was like, do you really want to know? And she's like, oh dear.
That's
my,
good.
My mother-in-law is awesome. She's the best mother-in-law ever. She's too, super sweet. And she's my new favorite person to watch shows with, especially Stranger Things.
It's kind of helpful then because like the nice thing about, I mean, not the nice thing, but I guess timing wise, it was good for you that Will and Jonathan and Mike were not in episode 7 at all, right?
Yeah, well, at least I can't remember if they were in the earlier part of the episode, but yeah, that did at least help for her. So it didn't spoil. So she's already into season 2.
I love it.
Oh man, this season, so much fun. Oh. So, very quick recap. We had a new villain, sort of. I mean, I guess they're all part of the same hive mind out there, but we had Vecna. It's intense. We had new characters. We had Eddie, who's in charge of the Hellfire Club. Big D&D nerd, but also kind of heavy metal. Fun character. Who else did we have?
I feel like if we're going to talk more at new characters, they're going to be bad guys for the most part.
That's true. It's going to take a long time to get through all the new characters. Some of the highlights from this season.
We have Argyle is the other new character, but I think both of us, he hasn't won us over yet. He's just...
That's true. We'll save
he's
that
just kind
later.
Of there and high.
Yeah. Yeah, so we had this, like, where did we leave off? There are a couple of things where we're left hanging.
So, since we just mentioned Argyle, he is with Jonathan, Will, and Mike. They just went to Susie, who we got to see again. I'm so glad we had more Susie this season.
Yes, we visited Susie in person. We saw her crazy house with all her siblings and her dad.
Mm-hmm. And she gave them an address. I love that sass of her with... she was finding an address for them and Mike goes, can you print this off? And she's like, no, I can program computers and hack into systems, but I don't know how to print things.
Yeah. Like, no, my skills end there.
Yeah.
And she said it like with such a serious face too. Susie's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah. Like she is perfect for Dustin. Yeah, I love it.
They're meant for each other.
So they have jumped in to go try and find Elle because they believe she's in danger. I mean, one of the guys that was protecting them in LA is basically being interrogated very brutally by this man from the US government. So they're on their way to save Elle, who is trying to get her powers back. She's reliving. You know what? Let's come back to Elle. Why don't we talk about the rest of the gang and then we'll finish with Elle because hers feels pretty big since that's okay. So everybody else, Lucas, Max, Dustin, Robin, Steve, and Nancy are all, we just left with them climbing through the ceiling in Eddie's house, leaving the upside down to get back to our world.
Yeah.
And Nancy was basically pulled in by Vecna.
And that was crazy.
What?
That was like one of those twists that like it came out of nowhere, but again, they earned it. And it's one of those moments where like, I don't know what's going to happen to Nancy because I don't know if I can really predict that.
Yeah. So Nancy is being pulled into this Vecna imagination, getting some background, I guess. At the same time, Elle, while trying to get her powers back, Derek, as you mentioned, is reliving some trauma in her life. And I gotta say, like, I do love just like the mental health analogies of this season, which I'd love to get into in a minute, but since we're recapping right now, Elle is reliving a moment in the lab where basically every other test subject died. And at the beginning of the season, we thought it was Elle. I was so relieved that it wasn't her, but in destroying this orderly from the lab, she not only, pushed him into the upside down, she basically opened the gateway to the original gateway to the upside down and created Vecna from this orderly. Like how fantastic was that? Like that was where the episode ended. And I just like, after we kind of started to realize in the backstory before then, because Elle is being told this while Nancy is seeing it, it was kind of like, that was my only lull in the season was it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. You're a bad guy. This is your backstory. Get us there. Like it was taking a little long for me. I think that was the only lag I really felt. Mm-hmm. But it was still so awesome just seeing this guy turn into our new villain, as Robin described him, the general of the Mind Slayer, since a Demogorgon is just a foot soldier. And I love that it was Jamie Campbell Bauer, because as soon as we saw him, I pulled it up on IMDb and he was just listed in that first episode as kind orderly. And I was like, No.
You know,
I appreciate that you've kept it hidden, but we know something else is going to happen with young
I appreciate that too. The moment we saw him, we're like, wow, that guy's creepy. But then he's nicer and he seems okay. I'm like, okay, does he just look creepy? And then I thought, I was pretty sure I recognized the actor. I was like, I think it's this guy. And I was thinking of the characters he played before. Did turn out I was right. So he was in Sweeney Todd as Anthony. He was the young Gellert Grindelwald in Deathly Hallows, and I think in some of the new Fantastic Beasts movies. He's in like Mortal Instruments, I think, somebody in Twilight, I think.
Yeah, I think he was in Twilight. He was also in Camelot, but yes, Mortal Instruments, Twilight, and Camelot are three things I have not seen. I just know from IMDb that he is in them.
Yeah.
But that was just all a really cool moment. I guess we could say instead of the Orderly or Vecna, we could just say Victor Creel, or not Victor Creel, sorry. Henry Creel was his name because he's the son. Which, how amazing was that episode where we finally met Victor Creel?
Yes. And of course, Victor Creel was played by
Robert England,
who was the original Freddy Krueger. Which
the beginning of that episode. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say so many things in this.
You go
season,
ahead, and then I'll go.
After people, it's a lot like Nightmare on Elm Street. All of a sudden, they're like in a dream and didn't realize it. And he is haunting dreams and nightmares in a way. But it's also kind of blended a little bit with It. And some other things.
Big 80s vibe.
Yeah, they're pulling on like 80s horror vibes on this one, which is interesting. In each season, we've gotten some, you know, we've gotten those pop culture references to 80s things. And they've pulled from those to even inspire a lot of the story. And they do that again here in a really interesting way. I did think it was interesting. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but you know how each season you've got some pop culture thing that clues you into like some kind of foreshadowing each time. Like the first season, we first meet the boys playing D&D and they're encountering the Demogorgon, and there's Will's like moment where he's trying to sacrifice himself and stuff. And like that kind of clues into what's coming. And then in the second season, they're playing Dig Dug at the beginning. And then there's, you know, the Mind Flayer has done all the tunnels underneath Hawkins, you find out. And then the third season, you've got, they're watching Day of the Dead at the movie theater, and then you've got people who are basically zombified all over town. So the fourth season, this one, it seemed like we didn't really get that in the first episode. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we just get a whole bunch of stuff of them like going into school at the beginning of the day. But the way they play it up, it's like they're in kind of a lot of these 80s high school movies, you know? They do seem to play in a lot of those tropes.
Yeah, because they definitely played with, you know, the cheerleaders and the jocks, and there's so much just unnecessary blood and gore. And like you said, it was very reminiscent of It, which actually, while I was rewatching Stranger Things to get ready for this, I had just finished reading Stephen King's It, and I was rewatching the movies. And my roommate just was kind of walking in every now and then. Then she saw me watching Stranger Things after it. And she's like, these kids are so much like the kids from It. That's hilarious. Circling back
on what Wolfhard is in both.
Yes. Also that. What I was going to say earlier about Victor Creel, I love the way they handled episode 4, Dear Billy, when we actually finally see him, because at the beginning of that episode, you see Dustin and the others walking into the video store, and they walk right beside a Freddy Krueger cardboard cutout. And then in the mental institution, he is like scratching the table and leaving the marks, which I thought was so perfect. Yeah. And then of course, when they go into the Victor Creel house, that also reminded me of Stephen King's It. So I love the playing. I love the way they've just played on 80s horror so much, which we'll see what more happens from there.
Oh, Danae, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second because another friend just said hello.
Oh, we don't have Ben to say her name the right way.
Blood good. Blood good. I'm so glad you're here, Kat. Thanks.
Kat, we love you. Mm-hmm. Kat has been so supportive all the time. And I think just a quick shout out to her always being the one to like and comment on our Instagram posts, because that's usually what I'm running for.
I think she shows up for every live show pretty much. She
shows up for all of them because she's so cool and so kind. Our best friend. Thank you, Kat.
I mean, yeah. Which Jonathan was another of our best friends, but he had to leave because he wanted to avoid the spoilers.
Spoilers. Again, if you're joining late, we are talking all spoilers for Stranger Things 4. Which was so good. I cannot get over how good it is. I've been doing recaps of every episode on Instagram for the Con Girls, if you don't follow us on Instagram. And each time, every episode, I'm just like, oh man, I can't, this is so good. And I run out of time to talk because I'm just so amazed at every aspect of this, from the writing and the acting and the directing, and also just the CGI and special effects are fantastic, because there was a lot of it this season, a lot more than I think we've ever seen before.
And places where they did a lot of practical effects too, that worked really well.
I appreciate that.
The whole thing with Elle at the beginning, like, I was a little unsure what was going to happen with that, but it was just around episode 3 or 4, I was like, I betcha that Vecna did that, and she was trying to fight him and save everybody. And so I was right, sort of. Like, I was partway there. I did not realize that Vecna was also, that actually that orderly who'd been nice to her was one who was also Vecna, and Vecna was created in that moment. My goodness. That was crazy.
Also, just how perfect were, like, the names of the bad guys this season? I mean, I know they always nail it on Stranger Things, but there's nothing like the surname Creel to really
That totally sounds like an 80s horror character, right?
Mm-hmm. It definitely does.
Yeah.
So, Derek, you mentioned the beginning of episode 1. We see them all going into school. Something that does happen in episode 1, which was easily my favorite moment of the season, was they need to find a replacement for their D&D campaign because Lucas has to play in the game. And I love just that montage of them asking everybody just Max making fun of them the whole time.
Yeah, typical Max.
But the fact that the national anthem is playing and in walks Erica, mm-hmm. American flag draped on her shoulders, ready to go. And then, of course, during the game, Erica saves the day as Lady Applejack in their D&D campaign. Erica has got to be my favorite character now.
She was so great. And, like, you go back and rewatch season 2 and 3 and catch these things where, like, just the facts. She says that, like, the first time we ever meet her, and then it's her catchphrase later. But, yeah, like, and she can get annoying because she's difficult to deal with. But I love her so much. And she's, like, at her prime when she shows up with that American flag around her shoulders. And her name for D&D is Lady Applejack. Like, they don't want to let her play, but then she describes her character and, like, all her skills and everything. Yeah, and she just outshines the rest of them. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't finished earlier. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I really loved that moment of her saving the day at the same moment that Lucas is saving the basketball game. Yeah. And his friends miss it, just like he missed the D&D, which, I mean, you and I were never sports people. We're not still not sports people. I had never really played organized sports, so I don't understand the appeal as much as others do. But I think that scene also made us like Eddie so much more. I think it made us understand him a lot better because he was so in character as their dungeon master too. And then, of course, later on, Mike explains he was the one that took them in and made them feel at home as freshmen, while Lucas was accepted by all the jocks. Eddie accepted them, and I thought that was awesome. And it made me like him a lot more because, like Erica, he was difficult to like from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about this privately, but not here. I think Erica is going to be the one stepping forward in one final move to help them destroy Vecna at the end.
Yeah.
Just because of that.
Because of the way, exactly, like the D&D thing seems like it would be foreshadowing. Which
exactly, and they always do that so well.
Yeah. So, like, we didn't get some pop culture thing in the, like, very first scene with the kids to give us that foreshadowing, but maybe that scene is going to be our foreshadowing. Or maybe Lucas will be the one to save the day. Or it might be somebody else that we don't expect in some way.
Yeah.
Like, someone coming from behind and, like, the smallest person is going to be, like, Frodo or something and step up. And really, like, that said, I don't know what to expect from the end. But okay, while we're talking about things we love, how awesome was Murray Bauman in this season?
That is the best he's ever been.
Yes.
Because he's another character who is, like Eddie, irritating at the beginning and just slowly wins you over. And I love that the first episode is him talking about, I'm sorry, I missed your call. I was at karate. And then what does he do to defeat the Russians in the control room?
Karate. Yeah,
it was so perfect.
And it's so great, like, the way he's talking about it, that moment where he's saying, you know, he's like, the lowest age is 13. So he's just been battling kids. He's like, but Jeremiah is 16 and he's really strong.
He's definitely like Dwight Schrute taking it with the children.
Totally. But in a way, it kind of makes sense that a guy who's taken some kind of martial arts classes, even if he's a bit of a slob, and has at least had some training and is like really high on adrenaline right then, might be able to beat another guy who's the same age, who has not had the same training, and maybe also is not in incredible shape, you know? Mm-hmm. The way it played out, I could kind of buy it. And
yeah,
it's just a great moment of victory for him that you needed to see happen, and it was so satisfying. And I love Murray versus Yuri, you know?
I loved just him going in his disguise was also just a really fun part of the season, because we know that Murray isn't an idiot. He may be arrogant at times and a little full of himself, but he was the one that helped come up with the idea of like watering down the idea to show that, oh, it was pollutions from this plant that is why Barbara is dead. Mm-hmm. And he knows Russian fluently. I mean, he helped translate for Alexei last season. Like, he's not an idiot, but in the moment he was able to step up. And I did love that bit in the plane where he's like talking himself into it. Into taking down Yuri. It was great.
Oh yeah. I want to remember those lines. What is it? Like, my arms are like iron. My hands are like arrows. My legs are like spears. And then he just punches and kicks the guy. It's great. Anything else? Favorite things? I mean, there were so many great moments.
I did, just because we talked about this, was very much an 80s horror slasher kind of thing with the cheerleader and the jocks. I was waiting for, because we had a little bit of unnecessary amount of gore, especially in episode one where Chrissy is being chased by Vecna and has like that flashback to her family. A lot of really gross moments there, which is true to the fashion of the 80s horror. I really did appreciate that moment when in episode seven, Nancy is, for lack of a better word, possessed by Vecna, and she is in the pool where Barb died, and just an obscene amount of blood just starts pouring into the pool. I thought that was very on brand. So
that's true.
I wouldn't say it was my favorite moment by any means, but I was like, okay, I appreciate this. We are on theme right now, especially as we're entering the climax of the season.
I also love that we got a little more information just about the logic behind the upside down. Like, when they're in the house, and I like the way the characters are able to figure things out. This is one thing I always love about the show. The characters are just smart enough that it is believable, and that you can still follow along and like them. You know, they're not too far ahead of the audience to where they're figuring out things too easily. And they're not so far behind the audience where you're just getting irritated with them, but they're kind of like right there. Right. And that's a really difficult balance to get as a writer, I think. But they figure out that the things in the upside down are only there based on what was around on that specific date that Will went missing, when L made contact with the Demogorgon that time, which is interesting. Like, still trying to figure out some of the logic of that. Like, I guess somehow, like, all that stuff in the upside down was created based on just a snapshot of our world at that moment. And then figuring out, like, okay, so this is how the lights actually worked, the way Will was able to trigger them. We get a little more information about that. And it's done in a way that, like, you're still, it doesn't take away from the story too, because it was things the characters were needing to figure out in the moment as they went. I do appreciate that. And also, like, I love the way all the characters do get to be themselves, you know? Like, sometimes when you've got a cast that keeps growing like this, it's very hard to have like a good balance and actually see all the characters in action. But the way they've got them spread out and you've got them still in groups together, it doesn't feel like they're just completely scattered. It feels like people are each doing the things that group needs to be doing. And they're still working together.
We're still seeing their friendship. I mean, with, you know, the radios and everything else. And even though, like you said, they are split, they're doing what they need to do, and they're doing it as the characters we love. And occasionally you get that like message of like, oh, why isn't Elle here? She has superpowers. Or, you know, do any of you guys know Morse code, when we know that like several of the other characters know Morse code? Those are some really great callbacks. Also, I'm getting texts from Con Girl Katie as she is watching episode seven. And I just got, is he Vecna? !! !!
I love that.
Yeah. So hopefully she'll join us in a few minutes and we'll see her reaction.
We'll stay on as long as we can and try not to be on so long that we lose all our viewers.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, so we've talked about some of these great things. Let's talk about some of the things that we weren't huge fans of, because even the greatest of shows, which just might be this one, is going to have some things that aren't perfect. For me personally, one thing that kept bugging me was Argyle. Mm-hmm. And like, I know, I wish Jim was here. He'd probably disagree with me. He probably thinks Argyle was really funny. And he was funny in some moments, except like, I just think that stoner character has been done so many times in so many movies and TV shows. And I've seen that person in real life so many times. And I've hated him every time I've seen him because it is so irritating. I don't like that Jonathan has become such a loser that he's just getting high all the time with Argyle. And it seems like he's accomplishing nothing and he's ruined his relationship with Nancy.
Okay, it's here's the thing though. Jonathan has always been a creep.
Yes.
I've never been a big fan of him. So I don't really feel upset that he and Nancy are on rocky ground right now because she has grown a lot as a person. She's doing a lot better. Steve has grown a lot as a person. Robin has grown a lot and we've only known her for two seasons now. Whereas I haven't seen that from Jonathan. He's just kind of stayed weak and honestly still a little creepy to me.
Yeah, I mean, the creepiness is in the first season when he's like following and kind of taking pictures of people without...
Oh, he's taking pictures of Nancy when she's taking her clothes off.
That's disturbing.
He never really had a comeuppance for that.
Yeah, he never really overcame that creepiness. Granted, exactly. In many ways, there's still like goodness to him with the way he takes care of Will, the way he wants to help all his friends and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that he can like somehow just ditch Argyle and redeem himself a little more in the season.
Yeah. As you were saying, with Argyle, I was also kind of frustrated with this character. I felt like his only purpose was to give the guys a vehicle to drive around in and to explain what was happening because it was somebody to talk to remind us of what has happened in the past and to provide some explanation as to what needs to happen next, which is a little bit on the lazy side for me. It's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not quite the same as just because we're talking Stranger Things. And I just mentioned this. I mean, Robin, we grew to like her. She was irritating in the first episode in Scoops Ahoy, but she was like, oh, get a Russian English notebook. She learned a couple of languages. So she was helpful in a few ways and we grew to like her. Or, I mean, a big change in, you know, Nancy was part of her kindness with the boys. And we saw, of course, everybody loves the relationship between Steve and Dustin in season two that really helped that character grow a lot. We just haven't experienced that, Jonathan. And I don't think Argyle is the way to make us like him more. He is a plot device more than anything else.
Yeah. And like that actually does touch on something else that was bugging me a little bit in the later episodes of this season. I don't know that it's something that they could have avoided, but there was so much plot that had to be explained that they had. It felt like a lot of the dialogue was just the characters explaining the plot to each other, which one thing that I've always loved about this show is how great we just get the character moments. You know, like in the first season, Hopper is not just out there looking for Will and talking about, you know, the possible conspiracies going on. He's relating it back to his own losses. Like the fact that he was in Vietnam and that he lost his daughter. And we do get like still a lot of that kind of character based stuff from him in this season. But so much of that seventh episode, I think when you've got the characters, you've got part of the gang in the Upside Down, you've got the other people trying to get them out of there. Like so much of what's going on is just people talking about stuff, talking about the plot, explaining it for each other and really for the audience. And it felt like we had so much of that in that one episode that it was getting a little tired. But at the same time, there were also some really cool things that we learned in that episode, which helped to make up for that a lot. Just like, you know, we've got that thing where /Henry Creel/Vecna is explaining his whole stuff. He's monologuing for a little while there. But it's also this huge reveal where if you're really, you might really be in the moment and just experiencing, oh my goodness, I can't believe this. So that it doesn't bother you that he's just monologuing it, you know?
I think I did have a long moment of like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. But it did get a little too dialogue-y where it was with some of the visuals we had, we figured it out pretty quickly, but then he still had to say it and he didn't say it as quickly or as concisely as he could have. I mean, so often in horror films, it's like, oh, I had to do this. And then we see like a few quick shots where it's like, oh, that explains the thing. Whereas in this case, it was like, well, I had to do this. We saw the thing because of this reason. We saw another thing because of this reason. When something that could have been about 30 seconds was stretched in almost 5 minutes. I don't know how long that whole
monologue. Particularly on a streaming service where people are going to go back and rewatch stuff, or if they're like confused about something, they're going to pause it and rewind it. You don't need to be hit over the head and like really have it explain.
Yeah, I think some of the shock of the orderly being Henry Creel and then also Vecna was lost because I sat here listening to a lecture for so long. Mm-hmm. I think it could have been a much more, it was still a powerful moment, but it could have been much more like, oh, what? No! If it had been a bit more concise.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's also a little bit of like, what was the reason for this character to explain all this stuff to seven-year-old, 11 in that moment? Because he didn't necessarily need to go into that whole explanation. Unless he just, yeah, I was like, as a viewer, I was trying to like find an explanation for why he was going into all that.
Especially when it's L remembering something that had happened already.
Yeah.
Not something that we had seen, but it was really a flashback for her. I think you could have cheated a little bit with the character, with her realizing, oh, it's because of this. I mean, so often we have characters in the show, like you said, realizing things faster than the audience. But I feel like that was a moment when you could have gotten away with it just for the sake of pacing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like what's great about the show is usually they do handle that really well. The characters figure something out just a step ahead of the audience, you know? And so often before, when they've had to explain like the sci-fi or the plot to us, it's been coming from a character who doesn't know all of it, like Mr. Clark, the science teacher, talking to them about the acrobat and the flea, and he's talking about just this theory about it, but he hasn't actually figured out. He doesn't know anything about the upside down. He's just saying, "Oh yeah, there's this theory, and like here's what you would need if you were going to do this." And so you can see the kids having their gears turning, and we as an audience are on the same, having the same experience as them. We're piecing it together. So if we had something else similar to that, I don't know, maybe it would have been a little more satisfying. That said, it was still an amazing twist.
It was
really excited to see what happens next.
I was a little disappointed because I had a theory that until we saw Creel's flashback that Vecna was actually Barbara. Hashtag justice for Barb.
And then we forget all the murders. Like, oh, it was Barb. Oh, never mind. I'm sure she had a good reason.
Yeah, she had a good reason. Probably.
Bless her heart.
Another point I just wanted to get into real quick is just how much mental health there was in this season, or that we've at least seen so far, because this evil thing in the beginning was going after people who had isolated themselves from others, who were in a very dark place already, and who weren't necessarily going about the right way to take care of themselves mentally. I mean, Chrissy obviously has experienced some sort of trauma, and she was dealing with what looked like bulimia, and she did go to the counselor, but maybe she wasn't quite as open as she could have been. And of course, as a person who struggled with some mental health things, it's not something that you can be super open with about, but it was in those moments though, for Chrissy, for, was it Freddie was the second kid, I think was his name.
Yeah.
Nancy's friend. And
it was a little confusing because there was like an Eddie and a Freddie, but.
Eddie and a Freddie. Yeah. Which also happens in It, another It touch, I thought. And then with the basketball player too, is they had been like slowly distancing themselves from friends and family, which is not something you should never really isolate yourself, I think, especially if you're going through something. And then of course, when Elle is dealing with this issue of not having her powers anymore. And it was because she had trauma that she had to work through. And I think that's a great illustration of oftentimes when we are dealing with trauma, when there's trauma that we have tried to just close away and forget, we are not going to perform to the best of our ability.
Yeah.
And after going somewhere and starting to work on it, that's when we really see her powers start to improve and they're slowly coming back. She has, when she worked on herself, and I'm not saying that you need to relive trauma to get better, but you do need to go get help. So, and I think it's also cool that all of this was dropped during May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. And they were very good examples of times when we need to work on ourselves and take care of ourselves mentally, because that's just as important as physical health.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that. And I think a lot of I mean, you see this some in the 80s horror, but really, like, horror, a lot of horror that's well done is, like, deals with those mental health issues, too. And it's, like, someone's personal problems are connected with whatever supernatural thing is haunting them. And when it's done well, it's very effective. Like, I mean, of course, another Netflix show, The Haunting of Hill House, we've talked about before and how well handled that was. A lot of it, really a lot of Stephen King stuff in general handles that kind of thing really well, mental health issues and more generally human nature and how that affects, you know, being haunted by something, or just, you know, dealing with evil in some way. It's really, yeah. And I'm with you. I think that was handled in a really interesting way. It was really great this season. I didn't realize May was Mental Health Awareness Month.
It was something I learned recently. I mean, I really hope it's May. I hope I haven't misspoken and named the wrong month, I am 90% sure that it was May. And I think something we have talked about and mentioned before on this podcast is we are religious people, and a big thing, like a kind of frustrating thing in this season was the whole D&D satanic things, because as a nerd, I mean, we grew up, we lived through the 80s and 90s. You lived through the 80s and 90s. I lived through the 90s of, you know, we experienced a lot of, oh, Pokemon and Harry Potter is evil. And I do remember being lectured once in a Sunday school about how D&D was dangerous. So that definitely was frustrating, not just as a nerd, but a religious person, to see this jock kid who in no way has acted the way a Christian should act until that point suddenly start quoting scripture to rally people.
Right.
And
that's frustrating.
But at the same time,
go on.
At the same time, though, it's very frustrating because, something that was well done, like we mentioned, was the way evil will go after someone, because there are evil things in this world. I know we've interviewed ghost hunters and things and talked about, like, we all on this podcast at least believe in a supernatural element to things. Demons will choose those moments of people who are weak, who are distancing themselves from others and isolating themselves and going into those dark places to attack and bring someone even further down. So I thought that was an awesome opportunity for, you know, Max, who's experiencing the grief of losing her stepbrother. She has broken up with Lucas. She's really distanced herself from her friends. And whenever she's out, she's listening to headphones and not talking to anybody. So of course, Vecna chose her as a means of attack. And what saved her from Vecna was being reminded of her friends, being reminded that there is good in this world, and being drawn back to it through the music that she loved, but also her friends encouraging her to fight and come out of it. I thought that was awesome. I really loved episode 4.
Yeah, there were so many times we were watching this, Lara would be like, expecto patronum. But it does parallel that a little bit, like reaching into your memories to find strength. Of course, with Elle, she's like finding power from memories that made her sad and angry. But there's also a whole thing of like going back and dealing with those sad and angry memories, and you sometimes using your happy memories to counteract that.
Which we saw this in season 2 as well. I just remembered when Will was possessed by the Mind Slayer and when they were going in and like Joyce gave him a memory about like Christmas, I think. And Jonathan was, oh, do you remember the time we went to this place and it was so much fun? And it was how they were able to get contact with Will through Morse code for him to remind him.
Yeah, he's like tapping on the chair with his hands. And
yeah. And I love that scene at the end of this season when Joyce is finally like, get out of my son! And just the mother's love again prevails. I thought that was fantastic. But that's not the season we're talking about. Although season 2 was awesome, season 4 was also amazing.
I love the whole thing with the way they save someone from Vecna's curse by playing music to bring them back. Which we were talking about this. Like, do you know what your song is that would rescue you from Vecna?
I feel like there's just so many options. Okay. Because in the they chose for Max a song that she's been listening to a lot lately. So I was like, oh, what have I been listening to a lot lately? And I do love the new Ben Barnes, who I've mentioned on before. I'm a very big fan of his. He was Prince Gatsby, and he's dropped an EP in November, and his song 1111 is one that's been on repeat for me. So I feel like that would be one. or just like any show tune that we love. I mean, mm-hmm. Heaven's Eyes from Prince of Egypt would probably do the trick.
Oh my goodness, that would totally. That would snap me out of it right away. I'm thinking, I told you this and I told Lara, like, Sister Act 2, pretty much anything. You start going like, joyful, joyful Lord, we adore. I'm not only rescued from Vecna's curse, I'm back in 1994 or 93, was it? And, you know, enjoying my childhood again. Yeah. Oh, it looks like Katie has finished because she just said, Ungush.
Oh my gosh.
She can't even use all of her vowels right now.
Get her reaction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You should hop on and share some reactions, Katie.
Oh, she's asking if we're almost done. I know that was my thing. I couldn't narrow down just one song that would save me from Vecna, because I listen to quite a bit of music. That was something I got on my Spotify Unwrapped, was like, you spent a crap ton of time listening to music this year.
Yeah. Well, I love
how, this was the artist he's listened to the most, and it was about 50,000 hours of your 800,000 hours on Spotify.
I mean, Stranger Things has been like, oh, hey, Katie's joining us. It's been a big part of our culture. Like, it's become a big cultural moment, and it's, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the big things people could be talking about now. We'll have to talk in a minute about the cosplays we think we're going to see from this, but
yes,
just people like coming up with their songs to rescue them from Vecna. I think that's going to be like the next, it's something we have to talk about, because you never know when that could happen. Okay. If you see my eyes glaze over,
exactly.
You just need to say, check the rhyme. Okay. Hey, Katie.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. We can hear you very well.
Okay. All right. I was like, I have to use my earphones because I'm on my phone and I don't think it would work. Mm. And you might hear an echo if I didn't.
Okay. Tell us how you're feeling.
Well, so I texted Danae like right before. I don't know if she shared. And I was like, oh, interesting place for them to stop it. Like, leaving Steve like that would be a really good way to end it, because everybody would be like, no, not Steve. Until I watched episode 7. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, if I have time. Not realizing that's an hour and a half episode. So I just finished it. And I figured it out a little bit late, but I did figure it out. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Spoiler alert, I'm sure you guys already said that. It's like, yeah, oh my gosh, he's number one. And mm-hmm. then like 5 seconds later, I was like, oh my gosh, is he? And Danae probably got my text, but I was like, is he Vecna? I have to say, they overall reactions, I were just finishing it like 3 minutes ago. They brought it this season. Like,
yeah, they did.
Because I think a lot of people were thinking, oh, can Stranger Things come back? It's been 2 years. Does anybody still care about it? And the Duffer Brothers they're like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, have we got a treat for you? Because that was insane. Mm-hmm. I'm a little mad that we didn't get a full-on reunion before the last two episodes. But at least we got one reunion. So, and a big reveal. I'm hyped. This was cool. This is making me kind of want to rewatch the whole series.
Okay, Derek and I each did a rewatch before watching this season. And I think I'm so glad I did. It helped.
We started it, but we did not finish it.
So,
Something
we were just talking about is what song would save us if we were eyes glazed over under Vecna's curse. What song do you think would save you from Vecna?
I asked Emily this literally while we were watching it tonight. And I'm like, Emily, what song would you play for me if I was under Vecna's curse? And she just had to think about it. And then she was like, probably something Jonas Brothers. And then I was like, oh, which one? And then she's like, oh, yeah, the one that they did for the Olympics. And I was like, okay, that's fair. Like, that's a good, solid choice. Remember This by the Jonas Brothers. Mm-hmm. For her, I would probably play like Bye 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 by NSYNC. Because if that didn't work, she's SOL. Something by NSYNC was all. I think I could literally play any NSYNC song, and her stuck under the curse world would not be able to avoid still doing the Bye 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 dance. Like, she would be in the dance. Like, I gotta do it. I gotta do it. I thank you. She's right. She's right there. I was like, she's like, you're not wrong. But yeah, what about you guys? What did you guys say?
I mean, I said basically anything from Sister Act 2.
Okay. All right.
You know, especially Joyful, Joyful. I mean, Oh Happy Day would work, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Is that why Danae was talking about Prince Caspian when I first joined in?
Yep.
Okay. That makes sense. Yep. That tracks.
11-11. Very appropriate.
Also appropriate, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I gotta say, I'm a little mad I have to wait a month now. But it is what it is. We might have to do like a con guy, con girls live watch of the finale. Because I mean it's 2.5 hours. So like yeah. It's a
how
movie.
glad are you that we got 7 episodes instead of 5 like they originally announced? Because that would have cut it off at like when we saw the basketball player who was killed, like right just above the lake.
Were they going to do like 5 and 4?
Yes.
Yeah, because it is weird to me that they did it such a weird split. I get now. Yeah.
It was for the point of storytelling instead of
just like balancing. It's like you showed us the first 2 acts instead of the first act.
Yeah.
So it's like you showed us act 1 and act 2 for people who are familiar with the screenwriting process and all that stuff. That's what they showed us. So I think it would have been a little weird if they ended it at 4 because there would have been a lot of like, it would have been a lot to have all air at once at the end. Like it would, I feel like if they had ended it at 4, people might not have been as interested to watch part 2 because there wasn't a lot of suspenseful stuff that we would have gotten. We got a lot in episode 5, 6, and 7. We got a lot. Yeah. So I think they could have ended it, like I said, at 6, but I think 4 would have been too early for them to split it up.
If they had ended at episode 6, it would have been like Steve getting attacked by the bat things in the Upside Down.
Yes.
That would have been really hard on me.
Yeah, that would have been hard on everybody.
I think
that
would have been hard on everybody. I think they chose the perfect point though to split it, but I think it wouldn't have been nearly as, I think, yes, we all love Steve, especially now that he's like a better character, but I feel like it's one where it's like, okay, if we lost him, how upset would we be? I don't know. It would have been to me about the same as stopping it in 4, watching this basketball player be killed above the lake. Because my biggest concern in that was like, oh my gosh, this kid saw it happen right after Eddie said, get back. He is convinced that Eddie is the culprit now.
I'm wondering, because generally speaking, this show doesn't kill off major characters. No. I mean, we did lose Sean Astin in the same season that he was introduced, but that's not.
And we lost, Billy. You know, they're all like secondary characters.
Yeah.
And Barb.
Yeah.
But by the way, guys, my phone is at 10%. I might cut out at any time. So just saying,
okay. Yeah. If you need to
think
leave,
it's possible
that's
we
okay,
could lose anyone
awesome.
That has been around since season 1. Like,
what's up?
Like Steve or Nancy now that she's like still in her Vecna trance.
Yeah.
And that's where we left it.
It's funny, Emily, and I think anybody who knows me or follows me on Twitter knows that I hate Nancy. I've hated her since season 1. And Emily goes, yeah, but she's kind of like better this season. And I'm like, yes, and I'm not okay with the fact that they're trying to make me like her now because I've had 3 seasons of like absolutely hating her. So I'm like, she's kind of badass, but like, but.
That's how I feel. Like, I feel like they want me to laugh at Argyle and we just don't like him.
You guys don't like him?
Not a bit.
No.
Okay. But do you like Eddie?
I do like Eddie.
Okay. Yeah.
He's not a perfect cinnamon roll, just to pull a phrase from 2013. But I think there's so much room for improvement and we see him trying to improve. Mm-hmm. And I do like him a lot. Okay. I would be very disappointed if something happens to Eddie, but I mentioned this in my Con Girls post earlier today. I have a feeling we are going to lose somebody this season.
Oh, I think
not,
we have to. Yeah.
I keep getting that feeling too. Okay. And sorry, you finish and then I've got some thoughts.
I was just going to say, like, I don't think it's going to be a side character this time, like the way we lost Billy last season. I think it will be not one of the original, like, D&D crew, but I could definitely see something happening to, like, Nancy, Jonathan, Steve, or even Max. I was really worried in that episode that we were about to lose Max, and I was not going to be okay if we did.
Well, I heard a rumor that Millie wasn't guaranteed to come back in season 5, but I don't know how you have a show this show without her.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how you possibly do that.
I mean, yeah. Even if they killed off 11, I feel like she would have to be in flashbacks at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's talk of a spinoff. I don't know what they would do. Like there was some little thing I read that like maybe it could be a spinoff about 11 on her own. I don't know. Yeah, like I think it's totally possible we could lose Nancy. And I think I think losing any of the major characters might be a bold move from the writers, but I think we've gotten to the point where we can generally trust the writers of this show.
Well, and next season is supposed to be the last season, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I
So like if next season is the last season, it's not like it's too early in the show's run to kill off a major character because it would all, you know, at the end, you know, they could kill everybody by the end. We don't know. They could pull a Game of Thrones. Yeah. Like we don't really know at this point.
And I don't think it's that kind of show. I think for the most part, like we're going to have all our major characters. We might lose a major character because they're not going to just kill off major characters just for the sake of heightening stakes and just for the sake of the gimmick. Do you know what I mean? Because in some ways, Game of Thrones and Walking Dead really did that to us where it was just like, oh, somebody's going to die, but you can't guess who it is to the
surprise,
point
where you don't really care
about the characters anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think this show would do that sort of thing. I do think, however, like
go ahead,
not everyone's safe. Sorry, I was gonna say I do think Will might be in danger here. The way they're playing up all this stuff with him, and he like they're laying groundwork like he's gonna come out and say that he's gay or something. I think it's leaning a little too hard that way, so that might actually be something else.
Well, and here's the thing, though,
this painting that he hasn't shown yet. I think he might die and then they'll show that painting and it'll be like Luna Lovegood style Friends or something.
I mean, a lot of people have been anticipating that Will die. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even started season 3, people were thinking that. So, it started with Will disappearing. Mm-hmm. It would have a symmetry to it, unfortunately.
I feel like go ahead, Katie.
Do have one question to ask you guys just in case I lose you guys. From a writing standpoint, as you guys both being writers, do you think, and I haven't seen any interviews with the Duffer brothers to know for sure, but do you think that having 3 years in between these seasons, do you think they fully utilized that with the writing of this season? To a good, like in a good way? Because it seems like it was really well written. And I don't know if that's from the timing.
I think to some extent, I think they've really done a great job expanding the world. Something we were talking about though, Katie, right before you hopped on, especially in episode 7, it got very exposition and there was no reason for number one to be monologuing as long as he did. I think we had moments where we figured out what was happening, but he still had to talk about it a little bit more. And that was really starting to drag for a bit. But I think it was a good opportunity. Yeah, I think they did utilize the time, like you said, pretty fairly well. Of course, they had other writers, too. They weren't the sole writers on this project.
Of course.
I still think they did a good job with it. And but part of the reason, though, that this season is as good as it is because of the setup they had from the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, it felt like, they connected a lot of holes that they have had in 3 seasons and came back to them, which some shows at this point in time would have completely already written them off. You see them mention 8 and her whole moment, that one terrible episode in season 2, you saw them reference it and all this different stuff. So I think they fully were like, we got to kind of wrap all these little holes up that people will notice if we don't fix them. So because I was like, I forgot about this and I forgot about that. And, even with Nancy's interaction at the end, you're like, oh, they're taking it back to something that people are still upset about, which is Barb. So like, they're really coming full circle. So it'll be interesting to see where part 2 takes us and then season 5 takes us.
Yeah. Kind of what we were mentioning earlier when it comes to killing someone off, I agree with Derek. I do not think they will do it for shock value. I think it'll have purpose. I get the vibe though that it will be one of those things of we will see everyone else afterwards living with that grief and moving on and having their own memorial for whichever character we lose, which you can still not guarantee that we'll lose a character. Maybe everybody will be fine, but I don't personally see that happening.
More or less fine. Yeah.
They'll probably need some therapy, but
considering the trauma, they'll be doing okay.
One other note I did want to make that I think was of importance. It gave me such 80s horror movie vibes. I know you guys aren't as much into horror as like me and some of the other con guys are, but first of all, Freddy Krueger being in the show and being references and there being references to Nightmare on Elm Street and giving that vibe of Nightmare on Elm Street with him in the movie, I mean, in the show. And the very first scene where you first see the death, I was like, this flat out reminds me of two things, Nightmare on Elm Street and Supernatural. Both of those things, it had that vibe for.
Yeah, we were explaining how it's so similar, like Nightmare on Elm Street, but we got a lot of like Stephen King's It vibes from it too.
That too, the floating and the air and everything. I also mentioned that to Em. Yep, the house. So it's a lot of 80s, a lot of 80s horror.
Also a gap of 27 years from when the family is murdered to when Vecna's attacking now.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of horror, a lot of horror Easter eggs and references that shows that they're also trying to respect the time and the roots and like what would influence horror at the time that this thing is taking place, you know? So, or when they mentioned like Fast Times and everything, like another thing they referenced 80s pop culture. So it's all interesting. I actually had to look up and find out if Vans shoes were around in the 80s because I could see that Max was wearing Vans. And as a costumer, I was like, was Vans around? Like, I don't know. So I had to look it up. They were in fact around. The slip-on Vans were made popular by Fast Times. So I have to respect the details they're putting in.
Interesting. Yes. They referenced Fast Times a few times.
Yes. I found out that Vans slip-on shoes were made popular, had a big surge because of Fast Times.
Wow.
So, and Max seems like the person who would be like, oh yeah, those are cool shoes. I'm going to buy those.
I could, just circling back to a moment from earlier, I think I could see something happening to Will this season. I think it would make more sense just thematically and as far as like the end caps to the show if it happened in the final season, next season. But, you know, I think they already established that his character is homosexual because there was that moment last season when he was in a fight with Mike. Because he wanted to play D&D, Mike was worried about Elle and Lucas was worried about Max, and they kind of abandoned the game to go check on them. And then of course, Will is mad and he's leaving. And something Mike says is like, it's not my fault. You don't like girls. Yeah. So,
but that doesn't necessarily,
I know people, I saw a big BuzzFeed article that was like, is Will actually gay? And it's like, probably. We've had a lot of clues for it so far. I'd be shocked if he wasn't at this point. And then, you know, he had like the Alan Turing project at the beginning of this season.
Yeah. And like, that was another little hint that I was looking at. I'm like, I wonder if that's like with them trying to hint at that, because like in the first season, the bullies that are picking on, they're referring to him as queer. They're saying like, oh, he's in fairyland with all the other fairies. They then, in, you know, like what you just mentioned, his fight with Mike. But I feel like there's so much of that. It makes me wonder if they were trying to lead you in another direction, because like, I mean, let's be real. Like almost every show on TV has a character who's gay and has a coming out moment. It would be more interesting to me as a viewer if he had some other secret that he didn't want to share, because we also already had Robin having her moment with Steve, you know, sharing that. And like, I'm sorry, it's just not brave anymore.
It would be interesting if it was more of that Dairy Girls thing where everybody thinks he's gay, but he's not, which if anybody watches Dairy Girls, that's a continuing joke with one character in that show. I mean, one character is gay, but another one, they're like, they keep calling him gay. And he's like, I'm not gay.
Yeah. But it'd be more original and more interesting writing if there's like something else going on with him, you know?
I think I just honestly don't care about it, if that makes sense. Like to me, not every single one of the characters needs to have a relationship or a or something like that. Like to me, Will is an awkward kid. Like he's got a lot of stuff. He's misunderstood at this point. Like, I'm like, okay, if he's gay, cool. If he's not, cool. It doesn't matter to me who his character is, but you know, I can understand how coming from someone who is LGBTQ, they might be wanting that and be like, hey, yeah, like this would be important to us. And, you know, sometimes that's important too. So I think it all just depends on what feels natural for the show. You know, if that's the decision they want to make, where Will is in fact gay, and that is written the way and it's the way that they want to handle it, I think it's great. The only thing that I don't want is anything to feel forced. So that's the biggest thing for me with any kind of diversity, any kind of thing like that. You just want it to feel natural. You want it to feel organic to the story, because as soon as you start to do it just to tick boxes, that's where it gets a little bit harder to watch, because you're just like, they're just doing this for this reason.
I don't want it to feel forced. I don't want it to feel like a cliche.
Yeah.
So I care more about, like, is Will going to survive the season?
Yeah,
absolutely. And something that always frustrates me is when romantic relationships are just really pushed with the kids, because none of these kids are 18 yet. They are kids, yeah. They are children. And I mean, that was a frustrating part for me last season, was how many just make out sessions there were. And I was like, these are children.
Yeah.
Let's let them be children.
Yeah.
Stop sexualizing children.
I think that's why for me, I said, I don't care whether Will is gay or straight or bi or whatever, because he is a freshman in high school.
I guarantee you the lives these freshmen
have is already worlds different than the life I had as a freshman. So, like, you know, for me, I'm just like, he's in high school. He's got time to figure this stuff out, and I don't need to see him figure out every single aspect of his life, especially after the trauma that kid went through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I think I'm probably going to cut out. So I am.
That's fine. I was just about to deliver final thoughts here.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's do some final thoughts, maybe directions we think the last two episodes are going to go. I love that they're really long. We've got like over 4 hours coming in those two episodes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you guys want me to go first just in case I cut out?
Yes, go.
All right. Sure. So the final two episodes for me, it's just mostly I don't want it to feel rushed. And I also don't want it to feel like they missed stuff, things like that, all the things you hope from a really, really long season finale. Because, like, I just think of Lost and how it was a 2-hour season finale, and it just was terrible to me. I know Jim will hate me for saying that, but that's my opinion. So I just want it to be good pacing. And I want them to continue this kind of shock, because, you know, they had a really big twist so far in this season, and it would be a shame for it to be wasted. So I think that's the biggest thing I hope from the last two episodes, is that they keep that momentum going. And of course, they all better be reunited, because if they're not, it will be really hard to watch. And Steve better not die. That's all I have to say. Because if Steve dies, it's like killing Daryl in The Walking Dead. Like, you know, we will riot.
Yeah. I mean, with 4 hours of content over two episodes, I feel like we're not going to be wanting for much, but at the same time, I would like to be still leave us wanting as the audience. That's the ultimate goal. I agree with pacing. I hope it works out well, because I still shake my fist at, like, How I Met Your Mother and Game of Thrones with their endings. I know this isn't the ending. We still have one more season, according to the things. There's still one more season. I definitely think we're gonna lose someone this season. I don't know if it'll be Steve. I feel like that was kind of a teaser with him getting attacked by the upside down bat things. I do think we're going to see a lot of cosplayers at Comic-Con, though, shirtless with just something wrapped around their middle and a hairy chest. Like, that's going to happen quite a bit.
Yeah, maybe a jean jacket over that. Yeah,
maybe.
And a lot of 11s with her her outfit that she's in when she's in the tank.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll probably get a lot of Eddies.
Yeah, lots of Eddies. Lots of
And I think some Argyles. Erica's with the American flag around her shoulders.
That was so cool. Best moment. Best moment.
I'd vote for her.
Yeah, totally. I think coming up, like, I think you're right. I think we've got a very good chance that we might lose a major character. I do think that in some way, if it's not Erica that makes the decisive move against Vecna, it will be some underdog, someone unexpected who doesn't seem like they've got anything to offer, who's going to come up and be like, boom, and beat the villain. Maybe it's Murray. Maybe it's Argyle, and I'll end up actually liking him, and then he'll die. I don't know. But if Erica sacrifices herself, then she will go down in history as the greatest hero on this entire series. maybe in any Netflix show in history.
I will riot if something happens to Erica. I will not be
I would not be okay with it either. But
I don't think the audience would like that very much.
I don't think so either. But like I would probably forget about Barb at that point.
Right? I think I could definitely see, just on the Argyle thing that you mentioned, Eric, I could totally see Eddie coming forward with something at the last minute and sacrificing himself, himself, just because he is the new character this season. I could really see that happening.
Yeah, and like in some like really nerdy revelation way, like he'll be like, oh, it'll be like this, and like make another reference, like kind of like the Mordor reference, where he's like, oh no, we can do that thing, or like him and Dustin, because they both kind of have the same wavelength kind of thing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think whatever happens, I think we are going to have a great time. I think we're really going to like it, and we're going to be glad we got it. It's just going to be very hard to wait until July.
It is. I think the only way we won't like it is if it's just suddenly like someone wakes up and this whole season was a dream. That's, and that's not going to happen. Let's be real.
Exactly.
It was all a D&D campaign.
Oh.
Oh, that
I stand by it. It's every single monster they've mentioned in their D&D campaigns, there has been some sort of that monster in the Upside Down. So I think the Upside Down is a long D&D campaign, but that's just my semi on a whim.
I could see that, but it's also like, for me, it's just children, because they are children combating this evil force. It's their way of putting it on like something they can understand.
Their way of understanding it.
They have the Demogorgon, and we have Vecna and the Mind Flayer. Yeah. It's just their way of battling it and coping.
But you know, like Jumanji, that's kind of what I'm thinking. You know, like the whole concept of Jumanji, but in D&D.
All right.
I mean, Jumanji really happened. They just turned. They just went back in time, though.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
You
all. It's a whole episode to discuss Jumanji now.
Yeah, that we'll do that soon. This has been great, but thank you, Katie, for joining us here to share your thoughts. I'm so glad to get a fresh reaction from somebody who literally just finished watching it before they opt on. But no starting problem. With you, Katie, let's all go and tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, you guys can find me on all social media, KT_Christine, across Twitch, TikTok. I'm trying to be better at TikTok again, but mostly Instagram and Twitter. Anytime I'm watching something like this, I usually tweet my thoughts on those. So if you don't mind spoilers on Twitter, you should follow me. But if you don't like spoilers on Twitter, I cannot promise that I don't sometimes post spoilers there. I'm good about it on Instagram, but not so good on Twitter sometimes. But yeah, that's where you guys can follow me. Probably be doing some sort of live tweeting for The Boys next week, because The Boys season 3 comes out, so we are hitting that, you know. And maybe I'll try to post some thoughts on the Bob's Burgers movie, because I saw that yesterday. So so that's where you guys can find me. Oh, and at the Con Girls, of course.
Yes. I'm Danae. You can find me on Instagram at DNAYS. And on Instagram at The Con Girls. I have been posting just episode reactions for every Stranger Things episode so far. So any thoughts that we didn't cover here, I'm sure I covered them there.
All right. And again, I'm Derek, the other half of the Samblings here. You can find me here frequently on The Con Guy, and also sometimes on Twitter at Con Guy Derek, CONGUYDEREK. But I will admit, I'm not on Twitter very often. Speaking of mental health, but you can find me there. Thank you again, everybody. We look forward to seeing the last two episodes with all of you. Have a great night.
Night.
Now I've got to find our little farewell video. All right, good night.
Thanks for listening to The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com. Find us on the We Be Geeks Collective or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And now on sci-fi.radio, Saturdays at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, both AM and PM. That's 9 o'clock Greenwich. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.